If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56david.com. Atlantic Coast Mortgage, Equal Housing Lender, NMLS 643-114.
You're listening to Steve Bertrand on Books. I'm glad you are. Welcome. Thanks for being here. Imagine waking up in the middle of the night one night and finding a bright light in your backyard with your husband or maybe your wife walking into it willingly and looking back to you with the words, only mouthing the words, "I'm sorry," before being lifted into space and being gone. That's the premise for Stephen Rowley's latest book, Take Me With You. He's with us now. Stephen, welcome.
Hi, Team Steve. Good to be with you.
It's Steve on Steven. And So from what I understand, this book comes out of a heated fight you had with your husband?
Well, fight might be too strong a word, but definitely a heated discussion that we have had. And I, you know, wonder if it's the same for everyone's spouse and partner. And that is, if a UFO suddenly appeared over your backyard and that beam of light shone down, and there's no time to think, there's no time to say goodbye or pack, it's just gut instinct, you go or not go. And my husband Byron was always clearly team go, and I'm left saying, well, wait a minute, is the life that we're building together not enough to stick around for? Are the dogs not enough to stick around for? But what I love about that hypothetical, as particularly the jumping off point for a novel, is I think both answers are defendable. I do think you know, the purpose of life is exploration. So how could the promise of answers to the unknowable questions in the universe, how could that? You'd have to go. You'd have to. But also, my life as a writer particularly has been about a more quiet exploration of, you know, of humanity, of our relationships, how we treat one another. And I do think it's possible for two people to be together for a lifetime and still not know everything about one another. So isn't that type of exploration also brave?
Is it an actual concern of yours that your husband might stay for the dogs and not for you?
I know where his loyalty lies.
In this story, Jesse Del Ruth is a young man who meets his architect husband, Norman, in a chance encounter on Venice Beach 30 years earlier. Norman is significantly older. Jesse has a thing about a father, really, right? In the story, he's kind of searching for a husband, a lover, but he's kind of in search of a dad too.
Yeah. Their age difference is probably only about 6 or 7 years, which is a big deal when you are 23 years old, maybe, you know, but it's interesting how age flattens over time. But yeah, that's a character who is looking for a role model in a way, as well as a partner. And then what are these long-term relationships like when our roles change a little bit? You know, Jesse is someone who has come into his own by the time we really open our story. He doesn't really need, a role model or a father figure in that way anymore. He's sort of stepped into his own light, as it were. And so, this is a couple who's been together for 30 years, but they find that within their marriage, their roles, interpersonal roles, are changing.
Sort of, changing is the right word, right? The fading might be the wrong word, in that the fire's there, the embers are there, the flame is just a little bit different.
Yeah, I mean, here we're talking about extremely, you know, like long-term relationships. So in literature particularly, we lionize new love, right? We love the meet cute. We love hockey smut, too, but we love the meet
you
cute.
You watch that show?
Oh, of course. Yeah.
Well, I haven't seen it yet. Yeah. Is it good?
Yeah, it's fantastic. You'll watch the first two episodes and you'll think, okay, I think I got a handle on this, but it really evolves into something very special.
I'm sorry I interrupted you.
No worries. But, you know, it's interesting to be writing a book about marriage and long-term relationships as a gay man who came out in the early 1990s. I'm really aging myself now. But, marriage equality seemed impossibly far away. I didn't think it would be something that I would see in my lifetime. And also, I don't know that I'd live to see this kind of middle age. You know, the life expectancy for gay men when I came out too was also not optimal. And so to be writing a book about a long-term relationship, about marriage, as a married person who's been with my husband for a long time, is sort of a unique perspective on the institution itself.
Norman, the man who steps into the light, says later, "I was tired. I was just tired," which I think as speaks to long-term relationships, sort of a natural ebb and flow. But then he also said, I was tired of America.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want you to sort of expand on that a little bit. What was Norman saying?
Yeah, I think it's something a lot of us feel, you know, that this is also a book about grief and grieving and longing and searching. And we may not all be grieving a person that we lost, although we've lost many, you know, particularly in the first half of this decade. But, you know, many of us are grieving a future we thought we understood, a country we thought we understood. It's exhausting, not only sometimes being a partner in a marriage, but being a citizen, being a partner in this country is kind of exhausting, and that we have chosen the most difficult way to do most everything, whether it's taxes or healthcare or whatnot, or that we have a media system that rewards sort of creating an atmosphere of fear and distrust amongst its citizens and turning us against one another, that we don't even fight for the most basic things for us that other countries have, that something like Sandy Hook wasn't a red line, that we didn't do something about gun violence in this country, that an entire classroom of first graders was just the cost of doing business. And so it is exhausting being a citizen of this country at sometimes. And yet, you know, we're not ready for a divorce, but, you know, similar to a marriage, there's always room for improvement in a relationship.
So just not to get ahead of myself, but to review the story a little bit, that Jesse married Norman 30 years ago. The marriage is starting to get a little stale. Maybe they need something new. They move to the desert. That's where this light comes. And Norman is the man who steps into the light and is lifted away.
I've heard someone say it's a book about alien abduction, but listen, abduction would be too strong a word.
Yeah, right. He went willingly.
He went willingly, yes.
And this sort of happened to you in real life?
Well, no, only in that my partner and I have had this sort of discussion about...
No, but there was a story where your partner was...
We moved to the desert, sure. You know, we got tired of living in the big city. We moved to the desert thinking, you know... change of scenery might be good for both of us. He's another writer too, that we, not only for our relationship, but for our creative selves, you know, the desire to sort of shake things up and reinvent ourselves. Sure.
You did say in another interview though, that his mother became ill.
Oh yeah. After I wrote this book, for sure. Yeah.
Oh, it was after the book was out.
It was not out, but it was after it was written. It was done.
I was
in that sort of 9-month period where the book is all done, but it's not coming out yet. Byron, my husband, got a call late one night that his mother was having a medical emergency and he had to fly to be by her side. And we bought him a one-way plane ticket back to his home in Louisiana. And I rushed him to the airport and put him on a plane and he was gone. Like in the story. And the other parallel, the fact that he'd gone to be with his mother, he literally returned to the mothership, if you will. And I didn't know how long he was going to be gone. It ended up being 5 weeks. But in that time, I wasn't sure, you know, okay, well, wait a minute. What is happening here? Is he coming back? What am I allowed to do in his absence? Can I rearrange the furniture? Can I start, you know, rearranging some of the systems and schedules that we have for our life together more to fit me as an individual? You know, how do you start to make change or to move on or, you know, anything else you might want to do? It was an interesting insight into the character. Now, since then, I have been on book tour for the past month and I am just home. So now I feel like Norman.
Yeah.
I've been the other partner who has left for a long stretch of time.
And it's kind of fascinating though. Then, so you live Jesse's role.
I live Jesse's life at first.
After you've already written it.
Yeah.
After you've written it. Wow.
Yeah.
You said there were some real parts of your marriage in this story too. So that just begs the question,
I know that's what everyone wants. Is this book about my marriage? And the answer to that is no, but also the answer to that is, maybe, you know, writers use real life details from their own lives and from the lives of people they know. It's those details that make a novel feel so layered and textured and lived in and time worn and real. As a matter of fact. So yes, are the, you know, beyond the central premise, which came from a discussion that I've had with my own husband, but there are lots of little details from our lives, little squabbles that make their way into the book. We're also very obsessed with this game, Wingspan, that makes its way into the book as well.
That's a real game.
Wingspan is a real game. Yeah.
Okay. So the big question is, would you go or would you stay? And now you ask this of other couples. You must create incredible tension in so many relationships.
I mean, if I've had to live through this tension, I'm going to pass it on. But I do think, you know, it's an incredible debate. And when I started writing this book, I was very much team stay. You know, this was a couple years ago when I began, and you know, life was going pretty well for me. It's still going well for me personally, but the country is such, world events are such that I can see the appeal in leaving. You know, some days it feels like, well, Earth is wrapping up here, so let's see what else is out there. I think I'm still team stay, for better or worse, but I see the appeal now.
Yeah, it sort of begs the question, is what life is about, what life is for? Is it for relationships and nurturing, or is it for, I don't know that I agree with you that it's for exploration. I suppose.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I say that, but it's up to the individual to define what exploration it means to them. Like I said, you know, it could be a very quiet exploration about how we treat one another and what, you know, just to search for meaning in our lives. But to some, exploration is, you know, sailing across an ocean or circumnavigating the globe, you know, or stepping aboard an alien craft if that opportunity presented itself. So,
Lindholm Roofing has appointments available now to provide you a complete roofing, siding, gutter, and tuck pointing inspection. Call 773-283-7675 or lindholmroofing.com. Tell them that Lou sent you. Lindholm Roofing, their family has your family covered.
Big and small.
We've talked about Jesse and Norman, but I was really taken by the supporting cast in this movie as well. Listen to me. I'm getting ahead of myself. We'll get there. But tell me about Robbie and Robbie's role in this story.
Just like Jesse is looking for a father, you know, I think they have been attracted to each other because they were both grieving loss in a way. Jesse lost his father from a very young age, never really knew his father. But Norman, likewise, lost a younger brother. And so he has been haunted by that loss in his life as well. But I do love, you know, the supporting cast in this. I had a lot of fun because I had, you know, to think if how would you explain a disappearance like that? You know, would you call the police? What would you do? How long before family and friends came looking for the person who was missing? And what would you say? And I've seen enough episodes of Dateline to know that the prime suspect would be the remaining spouse. And so to create this sort of outside world that starts closing in on Jesse as he's been left behind was fun.
I think the character that is most interesting to me is Randall, who's the neighbor.
Conspiracy theorist neighbor. You're not going to write a movie that has an alien subplot without a conspiracy theorist.
But in a way, he becomes, and there are a couple of scenes or a couple of passages where he might become that father figure or older brother figure for Jesse, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, he's not one-dimensional. Tell me about him.
Yeah, and he also becomes the voice of reason, I think, by the end of the book, that while you think what he has to say might be a bunch of nonsense, is actually very grounded in some real-world insight and wisdom about relationships. And so that's the fun of creating a character. You know, it's never interesting to me to write a stock villain or a stock weirdo in some ways. You know, you always want to subvert expectations. So if you need someone to do something bad for the purpose of your plot, then it's best to give them motivation so that as a reader, you understand exactly where that person is coming from. And so they don't feel like a plot device rather than a flesh and blood person with an agenda of their own. And that was true of Randall as well. You know, I wanted to present him one way and then, you know, peel the layers back a little bit and you see, oh, this is a person who's hurting and has had dealt with his own loss in his life. And he has real wisdom and insight, even though you might, you know, roll your eyes or pass it off as nonsense.
Yeah, wisdom is the word I was thinking of as well. The San Francisco, I was reading a review of the book, San Francisco Chronicle said this is more ambitious than your previous work. Do you agree with them?
I do agree with that. I don't consider it science fiction. It just brushes up against that. It's a very human and grounded story about relationships. And so in that sense, it is similar to my previous book, but it does sort of exist against this larger backdrop. And a slightly fantastical premise, but I'm always interested in the real world consequence of even big events like a potential alien abduction.
Yeah, and so that mothership could be anything, right?
It could be anything. Could be anything. Yeah.
Okay, I have to ask you this too, because the couple's in the desert. They're listening to music, and you slip in the name Pink Martini. Right? The band Pink Martini, which couldn't have been an accident. Why did you choose them?
Because I had a chance to meet that band and band leader Thomas and have lunch with them. And went to one of their concerts and they gave me a wonderful shout out from the stage. So I'm just giving them a shout out in return. But I've been, you know, after I got a chance to meet them, I've been listening to the music nonstop. And it was kind of, you know, in the background a lot as I was writing this book.
The other thing is then that you're talking about the music, the titles to your chapters were all YouTube songs. What's that about?
Well, the book takes place in Joshua Tree, and I am of an age where, you know, I was in high school in the 1980s. There was no bigger band in the world than U2. And that album, Joshua Tree, was certainly seminal. Now, how it relates to the book, not just because the book takes place in Joshua Tree, but the song titles, you know, in that album match so perfectly. They are about searching and yearning and longing and not understanding exactly where we are, where the streets have no name. I still haven't found what I'm looking for. It was just sort of irresistible to use them when they fit so well with the structure of the story that I was trying to tell.
You are familiar with the author Bobby Finger?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so Bobby was on the podcast a couple of weeks ago, and he has a story. The name of the book is We're Gathered Here Today, I believe, and it revolves around a gay marriage as well, a gay couple, and the questions that come with that. But the fact is, when you take your story or Bobby's story, you take the gender, we're just getting married. It doesn't matter what relationship or what genders we are. Marriage is marriage, as it turns out.
Yeah, and that's why I like to use the term marriage equality as opposed to gay marriage or whatnot, because it is just opening the institution for more people. It's not a separate entity. And I think, you know, this is one of the things where I'm so disappointed that our media ecosystem is trying to separate us and divide us, because we have so much more in common than not. And in fact, in the acknowledgments of the book, I open the acknowledgments with a quote from Justice Anthony Kennedy in writing the majority for the decision that's allowed for marriage equality. And he said that marriage responds to the universal fear that a lonely person might call out only to find no one there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's what marriage is, our desire not to be alone. That is a human desire. That is not a heterosexual desire or a homosexual desire. That is a human desire.
You know, when I give speeches or I go out and talk to public in the public, my message always is that it's just us. We're all us. You know, I do some work with people in Central America at eye clinics, and even if we don't share the language, it's amazing how much we do share and how we can communicate. And you're right, the media, and I've always been part of the media for 40 years, is about division in many ways, but in the end, we're all just us.
We're all just us, and it's unfortunate that fear seems to sell, right? You know, so to divide us is to make us afraid of one another, to make us fear one another, suspicious of one another. But that is people with a political agenda to do that. We are, as you say, not so different in our experience. And life is short and we are sharing this magnificent experience. And so I wish we were more open to people who were perhaps not different, perhaps not, you know, live the same lives as ours. But that's what I love about reading. You know, it's our job as readers, particularly as readers of fiction, to read books by people who don't look and sound like we do. It's very hard to deny someone their base humanity after you have heard their story. And in fact, it's one of the things that allowed me to live, you know, in a span of time where I never thought marriage equality would be something I saw in my lifetime, to now being married for 5 years and having it had be the law of the land now for 11 years. It's in part because we were allowed to tell our stories.
Everybody should read the book because it's a good read. It's a fun read. Stephen Rowley is the author. Take Me With You. But if we wait a couple of years, we might see it on TV.
We might, yeah.
What's
I'm very
going on there?
To say that Warner Brothers Television picked up the rights for a TV series alongside super producer Bill Lawrence, who's responsible for Ted Lasso and Shrinking and Scrubs and the new show Rooster on HBO and so many others. And I'm excited that it might be making its way to the screen.
Do you worry about losing control of your story if you give it away that way?
You know, I actually studied film. I went to film school and I learned sort of creative writing along the way. I sort of feel more self-taught when it comes to that. But one thing I understand about film and television is that it is a, you know, it is a collaborative process. I can always make my peace with my version of the story that I told. I'll point to the book. I'll point readers to the book.
That is author Stephen Rowley, and the name of the book is Take Me With You. It's a fun read. Check it out. I'm sorry about the abrupt ending there, but we had a couple of technical issues. All is well. I assure you, Stephen and I are still on speaking terms. Everything's good in that front. That's going to wrap things up for this edition of Steve Bertrand on Books. I'm glad you listened. I'm glad you're here, and I hope you'll subscribe. You can do that at Apple Podcasts or Spotify, wherever you get your podcast. You can subscribe so you don't miss an episode. We'll talk again next week.